Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mingus Speaks is the title of John F. Goodman's new book about this colorful, charismatic, irascible, and troubled bass player and composer. The book is built around his interviews with Mingus and Mingus's associates, recorded back in the 70s. John joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Welcome.
Hi. Glad to be with you.
So these conversations that you had with Charles Mingus, where was he in the arc of his career at that point?
Mingus was just coming out of a really bad period for himself. He was probably for 6 to 7 years, he was pretty much withdrawn from everything, the whole music scene. He had some health problems and was just in a kind of a bad way. But he began to play again and finally came back around 1972.
Mm-hmm. So the concert at Lincoln Center at what we now call Avery Fisher Hall, back mm-hmm. then was Philharmonic Hall, that eventually becomes a live record, mm-hmm. which when you reviewed it, you said it was almost more like a rehearsal than a concert. Was that because of it? Was it informal with people coming and going?
It was kind of a typical Mingus concert. he had a disastrous concert at Town Hall in the 60s, in the early 60s. And it was the music just fell apart. It was so complicated and difficult that they hadn't had the rehearsal time to be able to play it well. And Mingus would stop the band. He did a little of that at the Philharmonic Hall concert. And I think he was such a perfectionist about so many things in his music that it was frequently interrupted by Mingus's coaching or whatever.
Well, he was also known as a kind of provocateur, and he loved to provoke not just his audiences, but his musicians as well.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Was there some of that going on that evening?
Well, I don't think that, not so much, but he was very concerned, since this was his first public appearance in a long time, he was very concerned to get the music right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if somebody played an off note or something went not quite rhythmically right, he would say, okay, we're going to repeat that, bar number, bup, bup.
Well, the results of that concert are on this record called Charles Mingus and Friends in Concert. This piece has one of his typical punning titles. He loved his puns. E's flat, Oz flat 2. Flat, Oz flat 2. Charles Mingus and Friends in Concert, 1972 comeback concert and album. John F. Goodman, my guest, is the author of the new book Mingus Speaks, based on his own conversations with Mingus around this time. He reviewed that concert, in fact, for Playboy magazine back in 1972. When he finally comes back at this big concert at Lincoln Center, What is the reaction of the industry at large? Is it like, oh, Charles Mingus is back. Let's start putting out albums or you know.
It wasn't quite that strong.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah, there was some of that. There really was. And he worked with Tio Macero, who was a famous producer of jazz and such. And they did put out some records and some really good ones, Let My Children Hear Music.
So the album Let My Children Hear Music, this is one of the things that we get out of your various conversations with Mingus is, despite the fact that he is this great figure in jazz, he loved classical music. And
yes.
He talks about it constantly in the book. And some of that seems to be in evidence in this record, in Let My Children Hear Music.
Oh, definitely. You particularly in the Adagio piece.
Adagio Ma Non Troppo.
Yes. It was completely original to Mingus. I don't hear any kind of copying or appropriating of, but it has a very obvious classical feel to it and some classical form, in fact.
Just a little bit of Charles Mingus's piece, Adagio Ma Non Troppo, a marking that you would find quite frequently in classical music. It means slow, but not too slow. Let My Children Hear Music, 1972 album by Charles Mingus. So this is about the time, John Goodman, where you began this series of interviews with him. It's his comeback, as you mentioned before. John, what was Mingus like as a storyteller, as an interview subject?
There's never been a better interview subject, in my opinion. I mean, he was very difficult with people. I was lucky, and for some reason, we got on well from the beginning. I went backstage after the concert and met him, and I was a little bit nervous. His reputation, in many ways, preceded him, and he was very warm. Mm-hmm. Very open, great, enormous, big man. And I think part of the fact that I wrote for Playboy was sort of a kick for him. He loved to talk about sex and women and all of it. But he was always with me, very approachable, sometimes moody.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there was a lot of dead air, you know, and you would just sort of sit there and wait until the appropriate time to pick it up again.
So you recorded all of these conversations.
I recorded all this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he had a very strange, almost elliptical way of speaking. I mean, just his speaking voice was unusual, wasn't it?
Very difficult to understand, John. It took me a long time to you know, get it.
Yeah.
Like I call it machine gun style. He'd speak very fast and in a slurred kind of way so that you really had to learn kind of a new dialect to pick it up.
And it's pretty amazing the very few times in your book where you actually have to resort to, you know, unintelligible or words to that effect when transcribing these interviews. Here is the man himself. This is Charles Mingus speaking with John F. Goodman during a larger conversation about avant-garde music. And once again, his sort of love of classical music comes out in this clip, if you can make out what he's saying.
You think about it, man, even the guys in the jungles, man, they weren't just born as a baby and picked up a drum. Their daddy taught them how to play drums to send the messages and all that. You know,
right.
You just say, "Well, man, I'm Jesus born here. Hand me a drum, baby." lay me a flute on me, run me a clarinet next. Now I'm going to play a little bass. Where's Yasha Heifetz's violin? I'll play that for you better than him. Now when you get through, hand me Isaac Stearns. I'll play that better than him.
That is Charles Mingus. So not content with cutting his fellow jazz musicians, he's calling out Yasha Heifetz and Isaac Stern.
Mingus was one of these traditionalists about music and musical training, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that comes across constantly in the interviews that we did. He looked down on people who did not study and did not work at their music and did not understand the jazz traditions. And that was really important to him. And that's kind of what the clip is about.
Yeah. And the cutting contests, the old jazz tradition of musicians sort of doing battle with each other to show how much they had mastered their instrument and their music. That was important to him, too.
Very much so. Yeah.
So what was his kind of overall take on the avant-garde? He seems to have been kind of suspicious of how much actual musicality was behind that.
Well, he was suspicious, and more than that, he was very critical about some of what he heard. And he, at the beginning of our interviews, we had a lot of talk about the avant-garde, and mm-hmm. it's a big chapter in my book. And he didn't want to name names, but we did name some names. I think, John, he felt that a lot of these people were taking advantage of the big interest that was rising in so-called free jazz, and they were not really prepared, like somebody like Eric Dolphy, for instance, who played with Mingus for quite a few years. And who knew
and
how to play
flute
music
and saxophone, yeah.
And had training, and yeah. And had a tremendous facility with his reed instruments.
He seems not to have known what to make of Ornette Coleman. That, you know, early on in the book he says some pretty critical things, but then later in the book he says, well, you know, but people respond to us. He must have something that I'm not hearing, which for Mingus, it seems, was a pretty different thing for him to say, you know, not what you would have expected from him.
That's absolutely right. I'm glad you picked up on that, because one reviewer thought I was just putting down Ornette Coleman throughout, and that's not right. There was something that Mingus did here in Ornette's music, and in fact, in an early album, I think 1960, Pre-Bird, maybe it was, Mingus did. You could hear the influence of some of Ornette's music in the way Mingus's group played.
We're speaking with John F. Goodman. He's the author of the new book, Mingus Speaks, about the great jazz bassist and composer and pianist, Charles Mingus. How reliable is Charles Mingus as a narrator of the actual history of the music and of his own life?
He wrote a fictionalized, shall we say, autobiography called Beneath the Underdog, which was fairly popular. 1971. Again, it came out around the same time. And it's a book that has a lot of, I want to be accurate and say, distortion in it. A lot of myth-making.
Mm.
And a lot of wonderful stuff that really did reflect Mingus's life. So he had this tendency to mix what we would call, I guess, reality and his own ideas of how a piece like that or a fiction like that should come together.
Mm-hmm. So we've had a lot of memoirists sort of called on the carpet in recent years for mixing fact and myth-making or fiction or whatever term you want to use for it. Sounds like Mingus was ahead of the curve with that. Mm-hmm. He was also known for these legendary outbursts of anger at other musicians, at his own musicians. Were you on the receiving end of any of that?
No, never. Fortunately, but sure, he had a terrible temper. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there are all kinds of stories, and some of them are repeated in the book.
Right.
And it's just undeniable that the man had a fierce temper, which I think as time went along, at least in the two or three years that I was talking with him, it kind of moderated.
Mm-hmm.
I did not hear the kinds of stories that about punching people and holding knives on people and the kind of stuff that he did back in the 1950s.
Now, by the time you were interviewing him, this series of interviews that extended through, what, 1974?
Correct.
Did you see any evidence of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, which would eventually kill him?
Nobody knew what he had. It took a long time for them to diagnose what was ailing him. He was tremendously concerned about his health in most all the time that I knew him. He had problems with his knees. He had problems with what the doctors called congestive heart failure at one point. He's worried about his weight and a whole number of things. I think he, toward the end, he looked like a different person to me. And the last time I saw him was in a club in New York. I think it was around 1977, and they were playing in the Vanguard or someplace, and it the music wasn't very good, and he and I had a kind of strange perfunctory reunion. He didn't look bad. And I've got to believe that Mingus knew he was in a very bad way, but I'm sure they didn't know anything about Lou Gehrig's disease until he and Sue went to Mexico to try some cures.
Right. That's Sue Mingus, his wife. The book is called Mingus Speaks, a collection of conversations with Mingus and with some of his fellow musicians and producers by my guest, John F. Goodman. The book is out now, and John, he is, in death as in life, a larger-than-life character, and great reading. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.